transport goods to Iran, from Iran, through Iran.
Our activity is about gas, oil, petrochemical equipment, machinery, instrument. We can export many items to Russian companies. For example, as the machinery, as raw material, and it can help both sides to develop their business relationship as soon as possible.
Tehran and Moscow's interests coincide on many fronts. Both are faced with U.S. sanctions, and both are signatories to the 2015 deal, which has faced troubles following the U.S. withdrawal from the pact in 2018 and the reinstatement of sanctions on Iran. While the bans have adversely affected the Russo-Iranian trade, businessmen here believe there's a strong will from both Tehran and Moscow to overcome those restrictions.
I don't think it will be like a very, very big problem for our countries. Just, we have a border, we have a Caspian Sea, and we can transport cargo. This sanction, it is some problem for the trading, for the money transferring, but it's okay for logistics, no problem.
The American measures have complicated the Russian-Iranian commercial ties when it comes to money transfer and banking transactions. While alternatives such as the use of national currencies have already paid off, legal experts attending this forum say they have a better way out. Cryptocurrency.
Using cryptocurrencies, Iran and Moscow can effectively ditch the U.S. dollar. So if the two sides include this transaction method in their contracts, they can proceed with their businesses seamlessly without any concern over the impacts of U.S. measures.
Visits between Iranian and Russian officials have in recent months increased, following the West tightening its economic measures against both countries. Tehran and Moscow are now eyeing a 20-year strategic partnership treaty that would lay out the roadmap for future expansion of ties at all levels, from politics to economy and security.
This year, Tehran and Russia traded some $4 billion worth of commodities, roughly 90% up compared to last year's trade volume. Now, given the growing relationship between the two sides, the Iran-Russia Chamber of Commerce predicts that this figure will hit $10 billion by 2024. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
In just the past 9 months, the EU and US have together pumped €32 billion worth of lethal weapons into Ukraine. At a meeting here in Brussels on Tuesday, EU defence ministers agreed to increase their military spending by a huge amount between now and the end of 2025.
€70 billion.
Apparently, there is an urgent need to replace weapons being sent to Ukraine.
The supply of arms to Ukraine, it's a continuous flow. It flows every day. And every day there is a member state who provides more. The system has already been provided. I don't think we need new systems. What they need is ammunition to make the systems work.
One expert we interviewed online told us it is a dangerous policy.
The problem with further funding is that it suggests further escalation. An escalation is hazardous because by intent or by miscalculation, it can lead all of the parties into a nuclear conflict.
Many peace activists and rights groups say the military spending is grotesque given the EU's growing social crisis. Those in the European Parliament who oppose NATO and are calling for peace talks between Russia and Ukraine are furious at attempts to silence them.
We talk about democracy, but where is this going to end up? Those you brand as populist and anti-European have a democratic right to disagree with you on the course that Europe is taking.
Defence ministers have agreed to establish camps in up to 20 EU nations that will be used to train Ukrainian soldiers. Some security analysts are suggesting long-standing, controversial ambitions to create an EU army within the EU have effectively been put on hold. And now the strategy is to create an EU army in Ukraine. Jerome Hughes, Brussels. Iran insists that recent riots in the country were orchestrated by outside adversaries such as the United States. But EU foreign ministers meeting in Brussels on Monday took a different view. They have agreed on new sanctions against Iran, claiming the rioters are seeking freedom.
To support them, today the Council adopted another 31 listing under the Iran human rights regime.
The channel you are watching now, Press TV, has also been added to the EU sanctions list. Press TV management has vehemently rejected claims by the EU that the channel broadcast forced confessions from detainees during recent riots in Iran. EU officials have been asked to provide evidence to back up the claims, but it's already clear that will not be forthcoming, simply because it never happened. This latest set of sanctions follows similar measures against Iran taken by the EU in October.
Iran is geographically a very strong position because they can decide, OK, if the European Union is going to make life harder in terms of sanctions, we can close or threaten to close the Strait of Hormuz. That means that Qatar, which is the principal supplier, I think about 70% of gas is coming from Qatar these days, will be stranded.
One EU minister says the new sanctions should not be allowed to derail talks around the JCPOA Iran nuclear deal.
I hope that this can be kept separated because the JCPOA negotiations, of course, it has a long history already, and I would say it's this close that we could get an agreement on JCPOA.
During a debate on human rights in the European Parliament a few days ago, the EU was accused of displaying double standards.
Europe has invaded and butchered millions, plundered and committed genocide, overthrown and murdered revolutionaries, backed brutal dictators, imposed murderous sanctions.
Amid growing economic turmoil in the EU, many experts claim sanctions against Russia have backfired. In other words, sanctions don't work. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A high-ranking Venezuelan delegation is in Tehran to take part in a joint economic meeting with the Islamic Republic. The purpose of the commission is to deepen cooperation in strategic areas as part of a 20-year agreement signed between the two countries.
This is the 9th Joint Economic Commission, and as you know, representatives from both sides have identified potential areas of cooperation in different fields, including transportation, industries, agriculture, energy, science, and technology. We will be trying to find ways to facilitate trade between the two countries to boost bilateral relations in order to avert the consequences of U.S. sanctions.
The Islamic Republic of Iran and Venezuela are two independent states that share common views about many regional and international issues, such as seeking independence, the right to self-determination, and a multipolar world order.
Nosotros lo que estamos mostrando es...
We care about the well-being of our nations. Our values are different from imperialistic countries. Now that our people and our governments are united, we can avert the U.S. sanctions and allow out countries to prosper through bilateral cooperation and a strong political and economic ties.
Part of our scientific cooperation and training includes ways to advance new trends in molecular biology, biotechnology, and proteomics for cancer treatment.
In Venezuela, we have been testing regenerative agriculture in order to avoid desertification. We have achieved excellent results, and now we are ready to share our experiences with Iran.
Iran and Venezuela signed a 20-year cooperation roadmap during a state visit by President Nicolas Maduro to Tehran in June 2022, as the two oil-rich countries sanctioned by the U.S. pledged to boost bilateral ties. The 9th Joint Economic Commission of Iran and Venezuela will be going on for another 3 days. It is expected to pave the way for implementing the cooperation agreements signed between the two countries in different fields. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
A resolution was recently presented to the UN General Assembly for the first time after the Taliban took over Afghanistan. While discussing issues including security, terrorism, and the social and economic situation, the Assembly significantly refrained to recognize the Taliban as a government. Experts believe this could affect the nation.
Non-recognition of the Taliban by the global community could negatively affect Afghanistan. It would bring illegitimacy to the Taliban government. It would also have consequences for the country's diplomatic relations, trade, and culture. There may even be more sanctions. These could have adverse effects on people, especially the poor.
In response to this resolution, Suhail Shaheen, the head of the political office of the Islamic Emirate in Qatar, said according to Islamic principles and values, the Taliban are committed to fulfilling all the legitimate rights and demands of the people, and that they are trying to provide the right means and environment to achieve this goal. Experts say the recognition of the Taliban could have positive results.
If the Taliban government is recognized after the observation of human rights and some other standards by the Taliban, it could have very good results for the nation, such as in the fields of international relations and international economic interactions.
Since the Taliban took control 15 months ago, their non-recognition, along with the sanctions imposed on the central bank and the freezing of Afghan assets, has driven the economy of the country to the brink of collapse. It is believed the recognition of Taliban may be a way to improve the situation in the country. But on the other hand, releasing assets and removing sanctions could also be effective. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all. From the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O, the Most Merciful.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
North Korea has been on a missile launch run lately. In one day, it tested fire 25 missiles. Why has North Korea been so aggressive when it comes to these launches? Is it to grab attention from the U.S.? Yet when it comes to North Korea, the U.S. President Joe Biden says the U.S., Japan, and South Korea are more aligned than ever on North Korea. Shouldn't they try to be more aligned with North Korea itself instead of among themselves, or at least with China? Just a few of the questions we'll be asking from our guests in this edition of The Spotlight. First, let me introduce our guests. Mike Billington is the editor at the Executive Intelligence Review, joins us from Hamilton, Virginia. Also joining us is Arnold August. He's an author and journalist who joins us from Montreal.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Okay, welcome to you both, gentlemen. Mike Billington, I'll start with you. The amount of missiles that North Korea has launched is, in a sense, incredible. And one day, 25 missile tests were conducted. Why do you think that they feel that they have to launch so many missiles? What are they trying to say here?
Well, the obvious is that they're trying to demonstrate that they have the capacity to defend themselves and that they're willing to do so by attacking any source of attack from outside their borders. There may very well be other justifications which they have not made public.
Okay. Arnold August, let me ask you, in terms of the way that they have done this, analysts are saying that this is perhaps building to something bigger, like maybe a nuclear test, which the U.S. is anticipating, or a full long-range ballistic missile test out to be conducted to the Pacific, or both. Do you think that that is what North Korea is intending to do?
I think one has to look at North Korea, similar to what Mike just mentioned, from their own point of view, their own standpoint. It is quite obvious for some time, I would say, since the last meeting of the big powers in Madrid, NATO, last June, for the first time, NATO and the West specifically mentioned that, yes, we're concerned about Russia, but our main fear is the is China. And then, of course, you had the very well orchestrated and deliberate sending by the Biden administration, Nancy Pelosi, to Taiwan. And since then, it's been escalating. Now, in that context, I think that North Korea has every right to have nuclear weapons to defend themselves. One could just imagine if they did not have these weapons to defend themselves against the United States, it's quite possible that North Korea would have been overthrown by this time. Let us take the example, if I'm not mistaken, Gaddafi, he gave up on the issue of nuclear weapons. What happened after that? The United States invaded the country, killed the legitimate leader of that country in Libya, and has been going downhill since. So I think people are perhaps have to learn from history and put things into context and not allow the mainstream media to focus, North Korea, they're bad. They tested missiles, but what is the context?
Mm-hmm. Well, if you can tell us, Mike Billensing, whether these missile tests, along with the military exercises that the U.S. has conducted, whether it's with South Korea or with Japan, and also how it has been provoking China, such as providing, for example, Taiwan with arms, is all related, in a sense, to the way that North Korea has exercised these vast numbers of missile tests. I mean, are these things related?
Well, you know, everything is related in terms of the development of human history. The current global showdown, the global crisis being orchestrated virtually every day over many different aspects of the unfolding of history, the evolution of what has become a very near-term degeneration into global nuclear war centered around the Ukraine crisis. All these things are related. I think you really have to step back from the strategic nuclear confrontation, military threats, and so forth. It's required that you look at the global emergence of history as a from a single perspective in order to have a sense of what is going on in front of our eyes and what is rapidly escalating crisis situation that could become a war virtually overnight by intent or by mistake. That's the point of initiation of looking at this descent to a nuclear war. But on the other hand, you also have to have a broader perspective and recognizing that the Western financial system is disintegrating. We're sitting on top of the greatest explosion of the dollar-based Western financial system in history. And it's this that's driving the war rather than the other way around. The feeble and ridiculous effort by some of the Western financial moguls to say that the current Western financial disintegration is being brought about by Russia's taking its oil and gas off the markets is totally absurd. First of all, it's not Russia that took its oil and gas off the markets, but it also is trying to separate the energy crisis and the general economic breakdown crisis in the West from its reality, which is 30, 40 years of crazy speculative printing of money, dollars and other currencies.
Let's take a look at what Russia has said, actually, since you've mentioned Russia over here. Arnold August, Russian foreign minister, has said that the U.S. and NATO are militarizing the Southeast Asia region in order to contain the interests of Russia and China in the Asia-Pacific. Now, I'm looking at that statement coming from the Russian foreign minister, and I'm asking you to whether you can put that into context for us when it comes to the way that actually the U.S., has said that both Russia and China can exercise their influence on North Korea. You know, you have the U.S. on the one hand that obviously is not on good terms with Russia, nor with China, really, in a sense, accusing them of a variety and a host of issues, but yet they want to ask them to leverage their influence over North Korea. I mean, isn't that like having the cake and eat it too type approach by the U.S.?
Yes, it is. And I'd like to just add to that one point. Mike also said the necessity to look at the overall context and to dot the lines, dot the I's. So I would say, you know, we're looking at what region? It's a South China Sea. What is the key country in the South China Sea? There's only one, the People's Republic of China. And so, in my view, if you want to look into the context, the current offensive by the United States and its allies, including Canada and Europe, began, say, in 2014 in Russia when NATO launched its offensive to push Russia to the brink, where it had no choice to defend itself against NATO incursions right on the border of Russia. And I have said that before, and I'll say it again, while it is obvious the main target of NATO and Western countries is Russia, but the ultimate goal of these countries is to weaken Russia, not just as a phenomenon as such, but as part of the growing alliance between Russia and China, which also includes many other countries, such as BRICS, which is exploding. Every time we have an interview here on Press TV, we talk about the number of countries that are joining BRICS. Well, since the last conference here, there's been several other countries joining. So my view is that everything that's happening, whether it's in Eastern Europe or in the South China Sea, the main target is China. And I would not say just to contain China, as the United States puts it diplomatically, but the United States is not interested in containing anything. Right from this very beginning, the United States wants to control completely the countries of the world that they want to dominate. And those countries that stand up to U.S. domination, whether the United States admits it or not, the ultimate goal is regime change. Their goal in Russia is regime change. They want to get Putin out in order to have a government that is compliant with the United States. And the same thing goes, it's hard for them to talk about regime change and China, forget about it, but they're going to try everything to destabilize China and make it difficult for it to continue on the path of major economic developments that the whole world can now see.
Well, the U.S. is benefiting from this, though, in some sense, Mike Billington, if you agree. I mean, at this point, you had this massive war games that the U.S. conducted with Japan. Japan is now intimidated, and it wants, next month, it has announced that the government is going to double the defense budget over the next decade, and it's going to acquire long-range strike weapons, and of course, that's going to come from the U.S. Do you think that that is obviously one intention the U.S. has when it comes to North Korea vis-a-vis militarizing that region?
Yes, I think the answer is yes. The Western financial system is in a state of total bankruptcy, which is increasingly recognized around the world, and that there's no easy fix, no solution to the bankruptcy. And therefore, many in the West, the so-called war party, which includes people from all the political parties in the U.S., both the Republicans and Democrats, who believe that pushing for war is the only way to start the money pumping for the military-industrial complex, as well as the interplay between the national financial institutions in Europe, in the U.S., in developing sector, the South American banking interests, the African financial institutions, and so forth. So in that sense, yes, the diverting of funds to the money trading centers in the financial institutions, the hedge funds and the and other aspects of this, but in particular those that are tied to financing this war, which is, you know, demanding the printing of billions and billions, trillions even, of new credit being pumped out into the system. This is all interfaced. The Wall Street financier crowd and those who are making sure politically as well as financially that new credits are being issued regularly to finance the military industrial complex. All of that is being waged full steam.
Okay. All right. So, you know, while Mike Billington was speaking there, Arnold August, I couldn't help but try to draw a comparison here, which I don't know if it's appropriate or not. So I'm going to ask you, when you take a look at the way that the U.S. is militarizing the region, we're looking at obviously some of the countries in particular like South Korea and Japan. It kind of looks like what it's doing in the area where Ukraine is. You know, you have all these NATO countries, and they're all being pumped with lots of weapons, with the threat being Russia. And here you have the threat being North Korea, and they seem to be ramping up that kind of approach. And interestingly, reports are suggesting that Japan is negotiating the purchase of these Tomahawk cruise missiles, which has the ability to strike targets deep inside China. So that seems to be in line with what they're doing in the Ukraine area. Is that an appropriate comparison?
I think it's more than appropriate, because what we're seeing now over the last few weeks, few days, is a NATO-style aggression led by the United States and their allies such as Canada and Europe against China. There's no doubt about it. With Taiwan, I guess one could say the proxy in this case is Taiwan, as Ukraine is the proxy against Russia in Eastern Europe. And I think it's important to analyze the fact that it was raised by Mike and yourself, like the whole issue of a currency that is outside of the control of the United States and Europe and Canada. This is a major breakthrough, a major project that is going on right as we speak. That's why I have to mention BRICS once again, that is burgeoning. And the main feature of BRICS, it has already started, and that is using currencies that are not American currency, even using credit cards that are not American credit cards. And this, I think, poses a very important danger to U.S. hegemony. And just, I would also say, amongst what the United States says are their closest allies in this latest provocation in the South China Sea, such as Japan and South Korea. Well, I saw millions of people demonstrating in South Korea against this type of militarization, and perhaps other countries as well. So the United States will not have it that easy, or not as easy, they think, to keep this coalition going against China, as they are, to a certain extent, much less extent, not able to really solidify all of the European countries behind the American pressures against NATO, if not the government. Millions of people are demonstrating throughout Europe to get Europe out of NATO and stop American NATO arming of the Nazi regime in Ukraine. So there's a lot of things in play. Many things could come up in the next while. I will not be surprised if the United States may have some problem keeping control over South Korea and Japan.
Well, there's got to be something that needs to happen, because we're looking at how North Korea has conducted all these missile tests, Mike Billingsley. At this point, do you think that the U.S. and its allies there are going to just have a wait-and-see type approach, or are they going to actually... I mean, what is the... it's confusing what strategy the U.S. is really using when it comes to North Korea. I mean, you had Jake Sullivan say that, well, the North Korean nuclear test would be a flagrant violation, were it to happen, of multiple U.S. Security Council resolutions. I mean, is that the best that the U.S. can do when it comes to North Korea?
I don't think anyone in the Biden government has any actual plan that has some positive outcome.
Okay, it looks like we may have lost. I'll ask that question from you. I'm sorry we just lost you there, Mark Billington, if you have us. Arnold August, same question to you in less than a minute, please.
I don't think the Biden administration has any plans at all with regards to that area of the world, aside from the long-term goal to destabilize China and eventually try to control it. So I don't think they have a plan, but they are forced to have a plan now, because the Koreans were courageous enough to respond to those drills right around their territory by firing their nuclear weapons as a warning, say, look, you are not entering Korea, we are ready to defend ourselves. The United States always has in their mentality that the other countries in the South eventually will bow down and ally with the United States, but that is not going to happen with Korea, and it might not even happen in North Korea, and might not even happen with what they call are their allies in the South China Sea.
Thank you for that. Arnold August, author and journalist from Montreal. Mike Billington, thank you. Asia editor of the Executive Intelligence Review from Hamilton, Virginia. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tapway and the team, it's goodbye. Until next time.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Today we complete the explanation of Surah Hashr, which was revealed in Medina and is number 59 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran. The word Hashr in this surah does not denote the gathering on the day of resurrection, but it connotes people's gathering for migration and refers to the abject fate and defeat of the joint stratagems against Islam and Muslims of the Arab hypocrites and the rebellious Israelites who breached their agreement with the Prophet. We start from where we left you last Friday, and here are ayahs 18 and 19.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا اتقوا الله ولتنظر نفس ما قدمت لغد واتقوا الله إن الله خبير بما تعملون ولا تكونوا كالذين نسوا الله فأنساهم أنفسهم أُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْفَاسِقُونَ.
O you who have faith, be wary of Allah, and let every soul consider what he sends ahead for tomorrow, and be wary of Allah. Indeed, Allah is aware of what you do. And do not be like those who forgot Allah, and he made them forget themselves. It is they who are the transgressors. If you might recall, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah last Friday, we said hypocrisy makes a person devilish to the extent that he or she embarks on deceiving others and trying in vain to escape the misery in which they have trapped themselves. But there is escape for the Satan and his followers, who will be cast into the fires of hell and remain there forever for the breaking of promises and tempting simple-minded people to commit sins. The ayahs that we recited to you now advises Muslims to reflect on the fate of the ever-rebellious Israelites and also on the fate of the hypocrites who pretend to be Muslims, since it is proper cognition of the Almighty Creator and awe of His Majesty that makes a person better aware of afterlife and the provisions to be prepared for it, keeping in mind that Allah is aware of each and everything. Ayah 19 means to say that those who are negligent of the omnipresence of the Almighty Creator, He will make them forget their own selves, and they end up as transgressors. In other words, forgetting God Almighty leads a person to indulge in carnal desires and pleasures of the flesh, in violation of humanitarian values, and oblivious of the goal of creation and the certainty of the day of resurrection for the final judgment. One of the worst afflictions of a person is to forget his or her own self, which means forgetting the God-given inherent faculties that distinguish human beings from other creatures. Thus, It is full awareness of the divine laws, which creates self-control, respect for the rights of others, and the doing of good, while preventing us from committing sin. These ayahs teach us that, number one, faith is based upon proper cognition of God in order to abstain from sins. Number two, we should think of our faith on Judgment Day and make due provisions. And number three, one who forgets God forgets the goal of creation and purpose of life, thereby ending up as transgressor of humanitarian values. We now invite you to listen to Ayah 20 of Surah Hashr.
لا يستوي أصحاب النار وأصحاب الجنة أصحاب الجنة هم الفائزون.
Not equal are the inmates of the fire and the inhabitants of paradise. It is the inhabitants of paradise who are the successful ones. Here is a comparison which is made between two groups, that is, the God-fearing believers who are cognizant of the source of creation and the resurrection day, and the heedless ones who are oblivious of the omnipresence of the Almighty Creator and thus become forgetful of their own selves by indulging in sins and trampling humanitarian values. The disbelievers and unrepentant sinners end up in the fires of hell as a consequence of their evil deeds, while the true believers who obeyed God are rewarded the bliss of paradise for their success. From this ayah we'll learn that, number one, physical death is not the end of life to justify the insatiable quest for worldly gains that might end up in the inferno. The transient life of the mortal world is actually the field for sowing the seeds of good deeds in order to reap benefits in afterlife with the reward of the bliss of paradise. And number two, there is no third way other than truth and falsehood, which means human beings will either enter paradise or fall in hell. Is Ayah 21 of the same surah.
لو أنزلنا هذا القرآن على جبل لرأيته خاشعا متصدعا من خشية الله وتلك الأمثال نضربها للناس لعلهم يتفكرون.
Had we sent down this Quran upon a mountain, you would have surely seen it humbled and gone to pieces with the fear of Allah. We draw such examples for mankind so that they may reflect. One of the educational methods of the Noble Quran is to give examples and draw comparisons. Here it speaks of the great impact of the revelation of the divine words of the final heavenly scripture that was God entrusted to the last and greatest messenger with the universal message of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The ayah says that proper reflection on the contents of the Noble Quran reveals that its words are so penetrating that had they been sent down upon a mountain possessing intellect and perception, it would have trembled and broken into pieces. It is thus a matter of surprise that the negligent persons have become so stone-hearted because of the sins they commit that the recitation of the ayahs of the Noble Quran has no effect upon them because they do not reflect upon the contents of the heavenly scripture to acquire awe and proper cognizance of the Almighty Creator. This ayah teaches us the following points. Number one, at times, the Noble Quran applies indirect methods through similitudes to draw comparison in order to impact the audience. Number two, the hearts of the disbelievers and sinners become harder than stones. And number three, failure to reflect upon divine words is to drift away from truth. Now we conclude the explanation of Surah Hashr with the recitation of ayahs 22, 23, and 24.
هو الله الذي لا إله إلا هو عالم الغيب والشهادة هو الرحمن الرحيم هو الله الذي لا إله إلا هو الملك القدوس السلام المؤمن المهيمن العزيز الجبار المتكبر سبحان الله عما يشركون هو الله الخالق البارئ المصور له الأسماء الحسنى يسبح له ما في السماوات والأرض وهو العزيز الحكيم
He is Allah. There is no God except Him. No error of the unseen and the seen. He is the all-beneficent, the all-merciful. He is Allah, there is no God except Him. The sovereign, the all-holy, the all-benign, the securer, the all-conserver, the almighty, the all-compeller, the all-magnanimous. Glorified be Allah from any partners that they may ascribe to Him. He is Allah, the Creator, the Maker, the Granter of forms and color. His are the most excellent names. Whatever there is in the heavens and in the earth, glorify Him, and He is the Almighty, the All-Wise. The reference here is to some of the attributes of the Almighty Creator, whose chosen name is Allah, with which all the three ayahs begin, followed by 15 of His attributes, with His oneness being the first and foremost. He is fully aware of all things, whether visible or unseen. His mercy is all-encompassing, and He's the most beneficent. His sovereignty rules over the entire universe. He is the holy, the benign, the impeccable, the wise, and the just who never wrongs anyone and guarantees security to all. He is the omnipotent, the omniscient, with power over all and everything. He is the granter of the various forms, shapes, sizes, and colors that abound in the universe. His are the most excellent names, and He is magnanimous and far glorious to have any partner. These ayahs teach us that, number one, God's awareness and mercy have no limits and encompass everything. Number two, the one and only Creator of the universe is also its absolute ruler. Number three, He is free of any shortcoming or flaw, and whatever He bestows are favors and security. And number four, only Allah deserves glory. Sanctified is He with the most excellent attributes and wise, impeccable, and absolutely perfect is He. Well, dear listeners, on this note, we come to the end of Surah Hashr. And inshallah, we will start explanation of Surah Mumtahineh next week. God bless you and goodbye until then.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.